The meeting's called by the Socialist Equality Party and International Students for Social Equality to discuss the significance of the WikiLeaks revelations and the attacks on the website and its founder, Julian Assange. As our leaflet for the meeting says, Assange himself, the founder of WikiLeaks, has faced and faces death threats from US politicians and media figures, as well as calls for his trial and execution in the United States. For their part, the British authorities are participating in the efforts to extradite Assange to Sweden on trumped-up sex charges, where he'll almost certainly face extradition to the US and a possible death sentence. Again, as we say in the leaflet, much of what passes for the liberal or left milieu here has either joined in the right-wing campaign against Assange, or in what amounts to the same thing, a silent as to the grave threats to democratic rights that are posed by this counter-attack by the imperialist powers. Before asking Comrade Rob to give his report tonight, though, I'd just like to make a few remarks about the context in which our meeting takes place and its relation to the main topic tonight. These are two extraordinary months in world events that have just passed, beginning with the mass uprising in Tunisia, following through in the revolution in Egypt, and now the events unfolding in Libya and a number of other countries in North Africa and the Middle East. There's a saying that a week is a long time in politics, but the speed of these events are truly breathtaking and are measured in days, if not hours. On December 17th, the self-immolation of Mohamed Bouazi, a Tunisian street vendor, unleashed a movement that 28 days later saw the flight of Tunisia's president, Ben Ali, fleeing to Saudi Arabia, ending 23 years in power. In the new year, January 25th, the mass protest began in Egypt, one of the most populous countries in Africa and the Middle East, eventually bringing millions onto the streets. Then 18 days later, on February the 11th, Egypt's president Hosni Mubarak resigned. Now, some 12 days later, we are witnessing tens of thousands taking to the streets of the cities of Libya, calling for an end to the regime headed by Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. The eastern half of the country is said to be in the hands of those opposed to Gaddafi, and if you just look on the BBC website tonight, they're now saying the battle is on for western Libya and that the only loyal supporters being shown on state TV are to be found in Tripoli. Against those who claim fallaciously that the WikiLeaks revelations are of no significance, the thousands of previously secret documents published so far expose the real nature of imperialist diplomacy. They provide incontrovertible evidence of the reactionary policies and plots hatched in Washington, London, Berlin, Paris, Rome and all the imperialist capitals against the working class in every country and the world's oppressed masses. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have performed a great service in providing access to these secret cables. Those of you that are familiar with our international internet presence, the World Socialist website, will have seen the extensive coverage that we have given to the WikiLeaks revelations and have published hundreds of articles, 30 in just January and February alone. And our speaker tonight, Robert Stevens, writes regularly for the World Socialist website and has also written on WikiLeaks, particularly covering the extradition procedures. I just draw your attention to three articles that we published. One on January 19, WikiLeaks and Tunisia. This article said, quote, American foreign policy specialists have described the events in Tunisia over the past weeks as the, quote, first WikiLeaks revolution. This amounts to a grudging tribute from Washington to the impact of the courageous work of Julian Assange and his co-thinkers, who have made public thousands of documents that reveal the predations and crimes of American imperialism and the venality of its client regimes throughout the world. Then on January the 31st, we published an article, WikiLeaks cable shows close US ties with new Egyptian vice president. Drawing attention to the revelations in cable showing the close links between Washington, the Pentagon, and the Mubarak regime and those around Mubarak. And then on February the 5th, WikiLeaks cables reveal connivance of US government with Mubarak. And just today, WikiLeaks has now published three more cables highlighting the links between the American administration going back over many years and the Gaddafi regime in Libya. In particular, one headed Saif al-Islam, who is Gaddafi's son, staff reached out on Pall Mall political military issues. This is dated December 14, 2009. And this is a secret cable from the American ambassador in Tripoli detailing talks that have been held at various levels about supplying helicopters, missiles, military equipment, and other materiel from the US, from France, from Britain to Gaddafi, weaponry that has undoubtedly been used against the population in the most brutal fashion over the last days. So with that, I'd just like to introduce tonight's speaker, Robert Stevens, who's a member of the Central Committee of the Socialist Equality Party and, as I said, a regular contributor to the World Socialist website. After Rob's report, there'll be plenty of time for any questions or for comrades to make their own contributions or points.
Mobiles.
Mobiles. I was reminded and I forgot. Can everybody please either turn your mobiles off or set them to silent? Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for that introduction. Since November, WikiLeaks has been publishing some 250,000 secret US diplomatic cables. As a result of these leaks, and its early leaks of war logs showing the horrors of war in Afghanistan and Iraq over the last 10 years, WikiLeaks has come under the most ferocious assault. Unprecedented efforts began, which started with attempts to shut down its website almost immediately. Amazon, which WikiLeaks was forced to move its servers to, then removed WikiLeaks from its servers. The company EveryDNS shut down its web address, wikileaks.org. PayPal, MasterCard and Visa then blocked all financial transactions for WikiLeaks, upon which it relies heavily in terms of its operations. Now, this is the background to the Get Julian Assange campaign, which is an international manhunt, really, without precedent. Assange has faced public death threats from US politicians and media figures, as well as calls for his trial and execution. He was placed by Swedish prosecutors on an Interpol red alert over highly dubious sex charges following that. As a vast smear campaign went into operation against him, he was then arrested in Britain, thrown into solitary confinement, and now faces the real prospect of being extradited to Sweden. With this to happen, it is very probable that he will face extradition onto the United States and a possible death sentence. Now, it was just 5 days following the release of the cables in late November that Sweden's Director of Prosecutions, Marianne Neer, issued a European arrest warrant for Assange. And since that time, and even prior to that, Assange has been declared an enemy combatant or a terrorist and someone who should be taken out or, quote, assassinated. And the calls to have him killed have come from the very highest levels. Former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee has demanded the death penalty, while Republican Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin has insisted that WikiLeaks be branded a terrorist organisation and questioned why isn't Assange hunted down as if he was a member of Al-Qaeda. The US Vice President Joe Biden said that Assange was, quote, closer to a high-tech terrorist than a representative of the media. Bob Beckel, a strategist for the Democratic Party in the US, said on national TV in December, "This guy's a traitor, he's treasonous, and he's broken every law in the United States. And I'm not for the death penalty, so there's only one way to do it, illegally shoot the son of a bitch." Now, these calls to physically eliminate Assange have not just come from the United States. Tom Flanagan, a former advisor to the Canadian Prime Minister, said that Assange should be assassinated, and that Obama, quote, should put out a contract and maybe use a drone or something. President Obama himself has been more careful with his language, but has refused at any point to come out and condemn those who have made such death threats. Julia Gillard, the Prime Minister of Australia, declared without any evidence whatsoever that WikiLeaks' actions were illegal, thereby placing her government at the service of the United States witch hunt. Assange is a citizen of Australia, and its government has done absolutely nothing to defend even his most basic rights. His mother, Christine, had to appear 2 weeks ago outside the Foreign Minister Kevin Rudd's office to read out a petition demanding that he gets his basic legal and consular rights. 2 weeks ago in London, as Richard has referred to, Judge Riddle ruled that the decision will be taken on whether or not he's extradited tomorrow, February 24th. Under the arbitrary legislation of the European Arrest Warrant, and in line with the behind-the-scenes deals between Sweden, the United States and Britain, it's quite probable that the judge will actually rule in favour of Assange's extradition. Now, this is despite the fact that not a single charge to this point has been laid against Julian Assange, and he remains in a condition of virtual house arrest in which he has been since the first extradition hearing took place on December 16th. As Assange himself commented after the last hearing, he has still not heard any evidence of the allegation. As he stated, "In this case, we have not been able to present my side of the story. I have never been able to present my side of the story." The Socialist Equality Party, the International Committee of the Fourth International, our world movement, and in our continual coverage on the World Socialist website, completely condemn and oppose the attack on WikiLeaks and the framework of Julian Assange and demand his immediate release. Working people internationally have a pressing interest in the defence of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, because what is at stake here are fundamental issues of democratic rights. If the US government is able to destroy the website and imprison or kill its founder for leaking evidence of civilian killings in Iraq, massive atrocities in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and revealing cables that shed light on the day-to-day reality of imperialist diplomacy, then the most fundamental rights of all of us will have suffered a serious setback. The question must be asked, and we ask it outright, what is it that WikiLeaks has done which has provoked such a vitriolic and united response amongst the world's imperialist powers? The first denunciations of the website began in April last year, when it published under the title Collateral Murder a video which showed a massacre taking place of a group of civilians in Iraq, including two journalists employed by Reuters. I'm sure people here have seen it. You know, it's a footage from about a kilometre away of people just being wiped out by high-powered military artillery. WikiLeaks then published in July close to 77,000 documents on the war in Afghanistan, July last year. And these exposed large-scale civilian casualties and also the corruption of the US-installed government of Afghanistan, of President Hamid Karzai. In October, WikiLeaks then published 400,000 US military reports from Iraq, and this at that point was the biggest leak that ever been published in history from a government. These leaks included evidence of 15,000 previously unknown civilian casualties, and also the knowledge of the US military that the security forces of the puppet Iraqi regime were torturing and murdering alleged insurgents on a massive scale. Those leaks actually substantiated and actually confirmed what the Iraq body count survey, because the US government had always maintained there was no records of casualties on the Iraqi side that had been held. This confirmed that some records indeed had been held. They weren't complete, but it took the known figures to about 115,000. And in reality, because of what's not been recorded, the death casualty figures in Iraq are over 1 million. So this was quite an astounding leak that was revealed. Then in November, WikiLeaks began the release of the US diplomatic cables, which sent a shockwave around the world, because we were finally seeing at close hand the real nature of imperialist diplomacy on a day-to-day basis. And this is what was revealed in these cables, really was the holy of holies as far as the major imperialist powers were concerned, primarily the United States. The cables so far in the public domain have provided the world's people with an invaluable insight into the real state of international relations. The plots, conspiracies and crimes of the United States and other governments have been exposed, and the mounting global tensions that threaten to spark new military conflicts have also been revealed. In response to the cable releases, the Italian Foreign Minister Franco Frattini predicted it will be the September 11th of world diplomacy. And he said the cables would, quote, blow up the relationship of trust between states. And as became the norm amongst all governments, he denounced WikiLeaks then for what he described as its, quote, criminal activity. In Britain, the official government response was to state that the leaks were damaging to national security and, quote, inhibiting the conduct of governments. The White House response to the cables was also to associate WikiLeaks with criminal action, which it denounced as reckless and dangerous. The United States, the White House press release, took hypocrisy into uncharted territory because it then went on to state that the cables had, quote, put at risk not only the cause of human rights, but also the lives and work of these individuals named in the documents. Now, at the time, we stated in response to the release of the cables that we stated, quote, the US government is outraged that the world's population is now getting a glimpse into its dirty operations, unquote. And we continued, the cables that have been published so far reveal the desperation, the ruthlessness, and above all, the lies, criminality, and warmongering that pervade every action of the representatives of American capitalism, including the American media. WikiLeaks has enabled the world to see how behind closed doors, US diplomats and their allies are engaged in continuous conspiracies against other governments and are actively plotting new wars. So, what do we actually know from the cables? Well, we know that the US Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, instructed US embassies and the United Nations representatives of the US to gather information such as credit card numbers and even DNA samples and other biometric information on foreign leaders, including the United Nations General Secretary himself, Ban Ki-moon. Now, the sole purpose of such information, would be, of course, to use it to blackmail these people and to align themselves with future US policy and US demands in the immediate future. We know from the cables that Hillary Clinton and the Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd at the time discussed the prospect of using force against China if it failed to bow down to arrangements suitable to the United States and the Asian Pacific. An earlier 2006 cable revealed that former Australian Labor Party leader Kim Beazley told officials that Australia would, quote, have no alternative but to join a US war over Taiwan if one broke out. We also know that a war against Iran has been regularly discussed with the United States and various Middle Eastern regimes. We now know about secret US bombing in the Yemen and of the United States plotting with the Pakistani military in order to bring down a civilian government. We know about various conspiracies that have been hatched against various Latin American governments. We also know, in relation to Britain, that prior to the Chilcot inquiry, the British officials assured the United States government not to worry about anything with this inquiry because your interests will be protected. So much for the so-called independent inquiry currently going on, headed by John Chilcot. Now, the US has got great reasons to fear WikiLeaks, as these cables demonstrate, but it's not simply due to WikiLeaks finding out and revealing what it's done in the past, but also about what it's planning now and in the future. The current mass evils that are underway in the Middle East, which Richard made his introduction and raised this critical question, have shaken these dictatorial regimes on which the United States and also the UK have relied on for decades. They've been shaken to their foundations. One of the factors that contributed to the spread of these protests was the publication by WikiLeaks of cables from the US Embassy in Tunis describing the Tunisian regime in scathing terms as a kleptocracy and a dictatorship. And as the Egyptian Revolution began, WikiLeaks then released dozens of diplomatic cables that together reveal the United States has long been aware of the criminality of the Mubarak government and its savage abuses, including torture, random arrest, and extrajudicial killings. The documents also reveal that plans for the military supervised transfer of power from Mubarak to his son Gamal were also presented to Washington, and as we now know, these plans didn't quite go according to their plan. I'd like to just read some of the content from these cables because I think it also demonstrates and it serves really to refute those who say that there's nothing in these cables that's worthwhile knowing. We already know all this. It's not a lot of diplomatic talk. So what? Which has been quite a common position from those who you would think would normally oppose such attacks. So I'll just go into some of the content regarding the Cairo cables. A cable dated January 12, 2009, gives the lie to the Obama administration's claim that the Mubarak regime was not a dictatorship. The cable referred to the quasi-legal basis of that government, which has ruled through, quote, emergency powers for decades. The cable said, Egypt's state of emergency, in effect almost continuously since 1967, allows for the application of the 1958 emergency law, which grants the GOE, the government of Egypt, broad powers to arrest individuals without charge and to detain them indefinitely. The cable added, the regime has also, quote, has also used the emergency law in some recent cases to target bloggers and labour demonstrators. Other cables expose the United States' complicity in Egypt's use of torture against opponents of the regime and close US ties with the hated and short-lived Egyptian Vice President Omar Suleiman. Since 1993, Suleiman was the director of the Egyptian Direct General Intelligence Directorate, and in this role he worked very closely with the United States in suppressing the population in Egypt, Palestine, and throughout the entire region. And he was the key official in terms of the secret operations hatched between Egypt and the United States, including the rendition and torture, which was conducted as part of the war on terror. What has since actually come to light, and we've written on this ourselves on the World Socialist website, is that an Australian citizen called Mamdou Habib, he was arrested in Pakistan in 2001, and he was tortured by officials from the United States, Pakistan and Egypt between 2001 and 2005. And what he revealed was that in his torture in Egypt, he was actually tortured by none other than Omar Suleiman himself. When his mask, when the mask that was put on him, slipped from his face, he saw that the guy carrying out the torture was then the actual guy in charge of the Egyptian intelligence service, Omar Suleiman. Another cable dated April 21st, 2009, documents a meeting between Suleiman and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the United States, Michael Mullen. In this meeting, Suleiman emphasised that his, quote, overarching regional goal was combating radicalism, especially in Gaza, Egypt and Sudan. And he stressed his support for undermining Hamas's control of Gaza and the need to restore the power of the Palestinian Authority, which had worked closely with both the United States and Israel. And Suleiman said, a Gaza in the hands of radicals will never be calm. On Iran, the cable stated that Suleiman said, quote, Egypt was succeeding in preventing Iran from funneling financial support to Hamas through Egypt. And the cable says, Suleiman hoped that the US could encourage Iran to abandon its nuclear ambitions and stop interfering in regional affairs. And then Suleiman cautioned, quote, but Iran must pay a price for its actions. Domestically, regarding the government's crackdown on its own political opponents in Egypt, the cable noted that Suleiman said that only the Muslim Brotherhood remained and the Egyptian government continued to make it very difficult for them to operate. Yet another cable, this time from May 2007, discussed the possibility of power being transferred from Mubarak to Suleiman when he eventually stepped down. And it referred to Suleiman as a Mubarak's consigliere, i.e. a mafia boss who does the bidding for the main man. And it stated that he was in line for the long vacant vice presidential post. A further cable from January 26, 2006 is a memo of the visiting FBI director Robert Mueller to the US Embassy in Cairo. And this one noted, quote, the CIA has a strong and growing relationship with the Egyptian intelligence services. We believe your visit can help the FBI to establish a similarly robust and productive partnership with the State Security Investigative Service. And the cable states that leaders like Omar Suleiman, Interior Minister Adley, SIS Director Abdul Rahman, and especially President Mubarak see the, quote, national interest in improving law enforcement cooperation. Now, the Interior Minister Adley has since been sacked as a result of the initial stages of the Egyptian Revolution, and he faces charges of torture. Now, he has become really the scapegoat for the crimes that were conducted by all the top leaders of the regime, including Suleiman, which was carried out with the full knowledge of the United States, as the cables clearly demonstrate. Another cable which states that the regarding Gaza, that, quote, the Egyptian General Intelligence Chief Omar Suleiman told us Egypt wants Gaza to, quote, go hungry but not starve. Suleiman and the Minister of Defence and Field Marshal Tantawi, quote, each have claimed that the IDF, the Israeli Defence Force, would be welcome to reinvade Philadelphia if the IDF thought this would stop smuggling. Now, this is extraordinary. You've got a situation here where the two highest powers in the government and the military are suggesting that a foreign power be allowed onto Egyptian soil in order to suppress the Palestinian masses. And then, you know, in most other countries, this will be considered treasonable offences. And yet it's here in black and white, this is what was being discussed with the US government. So it's little wonder then that Suleiman, who was then, as I said, initially installed as the immediate successor to Suleiman before the power was handed to the military outright, was described by the US embassy as the most successful element of the relationship, unquote, between the US and Egyptian intelligence agencies. Now, as events have transpired and shown in the last week, Suleiman himself was as hated as Mubarak and couldn't do the job required of him by the Egyptian regime and the US government. However, Tantawi, who now leads the government as the head of the military junta, is, as the cables demonstrate, just as supportive of the US policy. A diplomatic cable published in March 2008 by WikiLeaks said of Tantawi, quote, he and Mubarak are focused on regime stability and maintaining the status quo through to the end of their time. So that's a cable which clearly states what Tantawi's agenda is. And this is the person who Cameron's been spending the last few days in the company of and being able to sell arms to and everything else that's been going on that we've written on the World Socialist website. And of course, one of the first pronouncements of the military regime in Egypt, the new regime, was to state that it will continue to honour all treaties with Egypt. And of course, you can extrapolate from that you know, this will be also honouring all treaties with the US government as well. The events in Tunisia and Egypt and now Libya and throughout the entire Middle East region and North Africa are the first major response to the world working class against the conditions which were created by the global economic crisis of capitalism. In bringing down Mubarak, the workers in Egypt have launched the first salvo in a world struggling against economic exploitation, the suppression of democratic rights and social inequality, which is defended by governments not only in Egypt but throughout the world. And what is taking place in these revolutions is a shift in mass consciousness, and the work of WikiLeaks, as we have seen, can play a very important role within that. But this shift in consciousness, which is taking place on such a vast scale, has not simply been all down to WikiLeaks. Over the past decade, the masses of people internationally have made important political experiences which have left their own indelible mark, from the theft of the US election in 2000 to the still unexplained events of September 2001, from the invasion of Afghanistan and in 2003 to the war against Iraq, which was launched on the basis of a lie that the Iraqi regime possessed weapons of mass destruction. Both of these criminal and illegal wars were launched in defiance of the majority of the world's population, and millions are still being subjected to deepening attacks on democratic rights conducted in the name of the war on terror, which was a product of that. And I think it's important to note that the very legislation that Julian Assange is being extradited for, or the attempt to extradite Julian Assange for, is the European arrest warrant, which was actually first discussed to be policy 10 days after after September 2001. It was discussed at an EU meeting that this would be brought in. And also, in the same legislation, they stated that it states, quote, they would also adopt a common definition of terrorism, allowing wanted persons to be handed over directly from one judicial authority to another. Now, the final European arrest warrant didn't come into place until June 2003, but the immediate impulse for it was the so-called war on terror. And as I said, the democratic rights of Julian Assange and many others which are being trampled on under this legislation are all a product of the reactionary laws such as this imposed over the last decade. Then in 2008, the world's population experienced the unravelling of the global economic crisis, the global capitalist economic system, and the onset of the world financial crash. As a result of this unprecedented bailout of the financial ruining elite, hundreds of millions of people have been thrust into a new era, into a life of poverty and misery in this new age of austerity, as it was described by Prime Minister David Cameron. Meanwhile, the enrichment of a tiny upper layer of society through what can only be described as criminal activity has continued apace. We've just seen in the last month or so the fact that the government has refused in any way to do anything about the massive bonuses being paid out to the bankers, which run into the millions and tens of millions of pounds. The announcement last week that Barclays Bank just reported profits of over £11 billion is paying virtually no income, no corporation tax whatsoever on that amount. It's paying something like £100 million, which represents about 1% of those profits. And Barclays then came out and said, you know, that there is no correlation anymore between our profits internationally and the tax that we pay to the UK government. So a clear statement that from the financial elite in the name of Barclays, that they will no longer obliged to pay any tax at all, despite everything that took place and the massive financial skullduggery and crimes that was conducted by these organisations and institutions in the world financial crash. Now, the state campaign against WikiLeaks recalls the political shockwaves that accompanied the release of diplomatic cables, diplomatic secrets that were carried out by Leon Trotsky as the People's Commissar for Foreign Affairs in the Soviet government that came to power in the Russian Revolution in November 1917. And in a statement accompanying the release of those documents from the files of the Tsarist government, Trotsky wrote, "Secret diplomacy is a necessary tool for the property minority, which is compelled to deceive the majority in order to subject it to its interests. Imperialism, with its dark plans of conquests and its robber alliances and deals, developed the system of secret diplomacy to the highest level. The struggle against imperialism, which is exhausting and destroying the peoples of Europe, is at the same time a struggle against capitalist diplomacy, which has caused enough to fear the light of day. The Russian people and the peoples of Europe and the whole world should learn the documentary truth about the plans forged in secret by the financiers and industrialists, together with their parliamentary and diplomatic agents. The people of Europe have paid for this right, have paid for the rights of this truth with countless sacrifices and universal economic desolation. The workers' and peasants' government abolishes secret diplomacy and its intrigues, codes and lies. We have nothing to hide. Our programme expresses the ardent wishes of millions of workers, soldiers and peasants." Now, you could easily transpose those words with just minor changes to the present situation today. And why is it that these words written over 90 years ago resonate so powerfully in today's world? And it's because the US cables have made clear that the same imperialist intrigues that Trotsky spoke about against the world's people are still being carried out to this very day. The documents of the Tsarist regime were released in the midst of World War I and exposed the real nature of that war. Today's documents come as we enter the second decade of this unending war on terror, and as preparations for war against China are under active consideration in imperialist military and political circles. The cables released by WikiLeaks are being read and followed by millions of people around the world. They've been brought face to face with a mass of documents that reveal what is normally very carefully concealed about the everyday workings of imperialism. And I think it's very important to understand that this universal deceit and systematic lying is not the product of just a few corrupt individuals, but is actually the outcome of an entire social system. Why is it necessary for such systemic lies? Why do the main imperialist powers feel it necessary to conceal and hide everything they do and keep it away from all public scrutiny and view? Again, we can turn to Trotsky for a valuable analysis which speaks to us today. And in politics, as Trotsky explained, the lie serves as a function of the class structure of society. And he said, quote, "The oppressors erect the lie into a system of befuddling the masses in order to maintain their rule. Revolution explodes the social lie. Revolution speaks the truth. revolution begins by giving things and social relationships their real name. And I think that really testifies to what how Rich introduced the meeting. What is happening throughout the Middle East and North Africa is just that, is the real truth being spoken. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing very clearly the response of the masses to this mass impoverishment and the corruption and the lies that have been uncovered. And today, we can say conversely that this desire for truth, the demand for truth, and the deep-felt appreciation when the truth is finally revealed has to signify the onset of a new period of social revolution and social upheaval. That's the meaning of the events in Tunisia, Egypt and Libya. The attack on WikiLeaks and the persecution of Julian Assange has aroused the opposition of millions of people around the world. And there's a growing concern, particularly amongst young people, that the truth needs to be brought out. That behind the web of lies, the capitalist politicians, irrespective of their nominal political coloration, are implementing policies that threaten the future of mankind and of the planet. And at this point, I want to explain something about the vast gulf that exists between, as I said, the majority of people, millions of people internationally, are following WikiLeaks very carefully and are concerned by what is being revealed. And you can see something very rotten in the pursuit of Julian Assange just shortly after the cables were released. The vast gulf between these people and those who represent represent normally the liberal political establishment. It's well known that The Guardian were amongst those newspapers that WikiLeaks signed an agreement with in order to release the US diplomatic cables to a wider audience. But The Guardian undertook this mission from a very, very different standpoint to that of WikiLeaks. The ink was actually barely dry on the agreement between WikiLeaks and The Guardian before it became clear that the newspaper's most pressing concern was actually what should be taken out of the documents, not what should be published. In an editorial which was produced by The Guardian, published on December 17th last year, just a few weeks after the cables began to be published, an editorial was produced where they firstly began to downplay the significance of what WikiLeaks had revealed. And the editorial stated, "The cables have revealed wrongdoing, war crimes, corruption, hypocrisy, greed, espionage, double-dealing, and the cynical exercise of power on a wondrous scale," before adding, "But we feel some sympathy with the poster on a Guardian comment thread this week who complained of wiki fatigue." The editorial then made a damning self-indictment in describing why it agreed to publish the cables. It stated, "We and four other news organisations have worked with WikiLeaks over many months in order carefully and responsibly to publish a small number of cables." It then stated that it hoped that future publications of WikiLeaks cables by other newspapers internationally, quote, "is done with due care to anything that might jeopardise individuals or sensitive ongoing operations." Excuse me. The Guardian then informed us all that the process of editing, contextualising, explanation and redaction is a painstaking one. It is part of the craft of journalism. Now, the main purpose of the editorial was to actually serve notice to the ruling elite that The Guardian itself was going to spearhead the campaign of character assassination against Julian Assange and was supportive of his extradition to Sweden. The editorial stated, "It is impossible to make judgments about what happened in private circumstances. That will be for the Swedish courts eventually to decide. But it is wrong that the notion that the allegations are simply a conspiracy or smear should go unexamined." The Guardian then acknowledged that it was in fact the conduit for the leaking of the police papers in Sweden, which had documented the police investigation of Assange. And the editorial continued, "Having been given access to the relevant Swedish police papers, including the women's claims and Assange's rebuttal, we have felt it right to present a brief summary of the nature of the complaints, together with Assange's response." And in the same December 17th issue, The Guardian published a scurrilous article by Nick Davis, which laid out in quite purient detail the sections of the Swedish police report, and thereby legitimised his questioning in Sweden and the calls for his extradition. And in fact, as the WSWS noted at the time, anybody who actually goes back and reads that Nick Davis piece in an objective manner, wouldn't draw from it that this was Assange was engaged in violent acts against women and had sexually abused women. That what he couldn't draw from that at all from what was being even written in the police papers. So the essential aim of the Guardian's editorial was to open the floodwaves for itself and its sister newspaper, The Observer, to open their pages to various feminist columnists who insisted that the case against Assange had to be answered, that Assange had to be pursued, as this was really all about women's rights and was not at all really anything to do with the cables that had been released by WikiLeaks. One of the articles published by The Observer the following day, after The Guardian declared for his expedition, was headlined, "So, Mr. Assange, why won't you just go back to Sweden now?" The author was Catherine Bennett, and she sought to ridicule in the piece what Assange's lawyer had described as the dark forces that were at work in pursuit of Assange in Sweden. And she wrote, Catherine Bennett wrote, "Was it the plan back at Dark Forces HQ that Assange's name should be now so potent amongst legions of influential, normally judicious supporters as to place him above the law?" And she concluded, "If Julian Assange accepts his extradition, travels to this liberal hellhole and answers the relevant questions, something approaching the facts might be established. Why doesn't he just do it?" And The Guardian didn't stop there. At this point, with relations between itself and WikiLeaks having broken down irrevocably, and Nick Davis himself having broken off all relations with Julian Assange, and with The Telegraph now publishing WikiLeaks cables as exclusives, The Guardian Books publishing department published this book, Inside Julian Assange's War on Terror, Inside Julian Assange's War on Secrecy, which is basically a hatchet job against Julian Assange. You know, if people read this, it's full of unsubstantiated hearsay, full of comments that can't be verified from Assange, and WikiLeaks has signalled its intention to actually sue for some of the statements that are made in this book. Even on the back, you know, is Assange a cyber terrorist? Is he an internet messiah? Is he an internet freedom fighter or a sex criminal? I mean, this is really designed to really divert from the central question of what WikiLeaks and Julian Assange have achieved in terms of their pioneering and quite heroic work, in terms of what The Guardian won't do, in terms of WikiLeaks' overall achievement up to this point in publishing this vitally necessary material and making it available to the world's population. Now, the book does at least make clear one type of redaction that The Guardian felt was required if it was to publish any of the WikiLeaks material in the future. David Lee and Luke Harding, who were Guardian writers who authored the book, state that, quote, stated regarding the Afghan war logs, quote, "The knottiest problems surrounded redactions. The papers planned to publish only a relatively small number of significant stories, and with them the text of a handful of relevant logs. WikiLeaks, on the other hand, intended simultaneously to unleash the lot. But many of the entries, particularly the, quote, threat reports derived from intelligence, mention the name of informants or those who had collaborated with US troops." The Guardian reporter Nick Davis then writes in the book that he had been working at the time on an article about the role of Task Force 373. Now, this Task Force 373 is basically a death squad operation which operates in secret in Afghanistan and has done for the past decade. And its role is basically to assassinate people that are given to it from names on lists by US high command, mainly those who are opposed to the US occupation. And Davis said in the book that he was concerned that one of the informants of the US occupation, who was assisting a Task Force 373 operation to have someone killed, could himself be killed if the logs were published without redaction. So The Guardian was essentially ensuring that this illegal and barbaric war, which had been exposed previously in the WikiLeaks cables for what it was, you know, a murderous war of imperialist conquest, basically. The Guardian was ensuring that these, basically saying that we should allow these operations to continue. You know, we have to make sure this sensitive operation doesn't get out into the wider public. Now, much of what passes for the liberal or left milieu has either joined in this right-wing campaign against Julian Assange, or in what amounts to the same thing, has remained silent while this grave threat to democratic rights is being imposed ferociously by the male imperialist powers. And the campaign by The Guardian is not simply a British phenomenon. The New York Times, the principal voice of American liberalism, has used the cables not to expose the crimes of the US government, but to go on record that the United States First Amendment of the Constitution in defence of free speech is not really based on, is really based on what you don't publish rather than what you do publish. As part of its ongoing campaign of persecution against WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange, Bill Keller, the editor of the Times, said, "We agree wholeheartedly that transparency is not an absolute good. Freedom of the press includes freedom not to publish, and that is a freedom we exercise with some regularity." And he added, "We have withheld from publication a good deal of information in these cables that on our own, and in consultation with government officials, we believe could put lives at risk or could harm the national interest." So once again, you know, an outright naked support, you know, for these wars in the Middle East, and an indent of that for covering up the plans for future wars of imperialist conquest. So how can this fight be taken forward in the future? The sentiments of all those who see behind the attack on WikiLeaks the bloody hand of the ruling elite are entirely correct, but as yet, many people concerned about this legal and political witch hunt lack a clear political perspective. The great service that WikiLeaks has provided to the world is that it has given out the raw material on the basis of which working people internationally can begin to delve into the real workings of imperialism and the nature of the capitalist class and its criminal and illegal operations. The WikiLeaks revelations, therefore, can be a starting point and a significant development of political consciousness and an orientation not just towards exposing the crimes of imperialism, but in constructing a revolutionary movement of the international working class that is necessary to overthrow imperialism itself and the capitalist order that it upholds. Such a struggle can only be developed by tackling the problems that it's at their source, and this requires an understanding that the dangers of war, the assault of democratic rights, and the deepening social and economic disorders that we all see are expressions of the breakdown of the capitalist system itself. And what is required is a struggle to put an end to that social system that by its very essence is the source of all these lies and oppression. And it means a turn to the international working class, to workers in Egypt, to workers in Tunisia, to workers throughout North Africa, in Libya. And to turn to the working class as the only social force capable of enthralling the imperialist system and thereby arming it with a revolutionary perspective and programme. And as I've tried to demonstrate, the response of all the governments around the world and the fact there has been no significant figure within governing circles who has come to defence of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange confirms that there is no constituency for the defence of democratic rights within these layers any longer. And how could there be when every single government is imposing such brutal attacks on the social conditions of workers internationally? You know, in Egypt, you know, we've read that over half the population lives on less than $2 a day. You know, this is replicated throughout the world. I was able to look at some figures recently, actually shown that the level of inequality in the United States itself, which has also been the scene now in the last weeks of massive protests by workers in the Midwestern state of Wisconsin, that the level of inequality actually that exists in the United States is bigger than it is in Egypt or Libya or anywhere in the Middle East. We're talking about the stealing of social wealth in the United States by the means of the bailout 2007-2008 on a scale which is completely unparalleled in history. You know, we're talking about the massive pauperisation of the entire population while the ruling elite is able to just basically seize whatever it wants of the social wealth of society. So the Socialist Equality Party proposes that the defence of democratic rights must be seen as a class question. It must be based on a political movement of the working class, and that means the building of a revolutionary socialist party. On this basis, there must be a break not only with the Labour Party, and as we've seen of the Labour Party in Australia, who have done everything they can to facilitate the prosecution of Julian Assange. There must be a break from the Labour Party and trade union apparatus, who are quite clearly bought and paid for agencies of imperialism, and also of those pseudo-left organisations that seek to tie workers to these apparatuses. I thought it was interesting that the response of the Socialist Workers Party to the WikiLeaks cables was to produce a very brave brief article which said that WikiLeaks is not a threat. That was the headline of this piece. To go on record that, you know, really, this is, as I said, this is tittle-tattle, nothing we don't already know here. You know, so what, big deal. And they've basically remained silent ever since. And that silence has only continued since the arrest of Julian Assange and his present prosecution in Britain. So to conclude, the global financial crisis has revealed to all in the economic sphere that the problems confronting working people are international in scope, and the WikiLeaks cables have underscored the same point in the political sphere. And the way forward lies in the building of a party, an international party, which fights for the unity of working people and internationally. And this is the perspective of our world movement, the International Committee of the Fourth International, the World Party of Socialist Revolution. I would ask everybody here today to really seriously consider joining our party, the Socialist Equality Party, to read our website every single day, the WSWS, and to join us in this great struggle ahead. Thank you.